Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Aaron Lowe. And if this is your first episode and you're wondering what this whole thing is all about, well, I'll tell you. Every week, I find my head surgically attached to the body of a different friend and cinephile. Together, we are given a note containing a theme, sometimes specific and sometimes vague. Our job is then to pick a pair of movies that fit that theme and then watch and discuss. This is the Incredible Two-Headed Podcast. Anyway,
he's a bounce on the bed.
Well, she just keeps running up to me, hugging me, and then letting herself fall back onto the bed. And then she theatrically bounces. I don't know if you've been hearing any of it, but I'm pretty sure the microphone will pick enough of it up.
Come on, you guys, no humor.
Yeah. Well, let me get into it. Let me introduce the show. This is the Incredible Two-Headed Podcast. It's a bit of a special episode, one of two special episodes going to be coming out here in rather quick succession. I mean, quick for the show. This is two episodes back to back. It's a special episode today because I have two guests. I have returning Rick Todd Johnson and J. Carlos Menjivar, who we've done some of these group chats before, but we're getting together and we're talking about best of 2022, but not really just a general best of. We're kind of focusing it on horror because it was, a lot of people have said, I think this, but it's kind of been the go-to refrain for a while now, is that 2022 is a rather strong year for horror, from studio, big studio releases, streaming originals, international films, low budget indies. There was just a lot of good horror that kind of made waves this year, and I think we all saw quite a few of them, and so I thought it'd be fun to talk about some of our bests, our favorites from last year. But First, how is everybody doing? Rick, we know you're not feeling too well. You're still recuperating from COVID. I don't know if you want to talk about it. I can not.
Of course I want to talk about it.
Other than that, how's everything going?
Yeah, just it's been a whole lot of me sitting around watching movies for an entire month since I got COVID on Christmas. So, or the day before Christmas is when I probably got it from somebody at work. So, so I have just been pounding movies like crazy for the last month, which I normally do anyway, but I'm averaging like six films a day right now. So,
wow. It's the dream.
I'm living the dream. Yeah, but I kind of live the dream all the time. So I usually average between four and five. So
never wake up, Rick.
I never go to sleep.
I of course, everybody's experience, I don't want to make light of it. Everybody experiences COVID differently. And some people it affects them very seriously. But for me, when I had COVID for those 2 weeks that I tested positive, it was very mild. So I was over it pretty much in a day. And when the day that I had it, I was mainly just tired, those were my major symptoms. It's like, a cough, but just lethargy. the
don't
upside,
say
yeah, sorry. The bodily function that shall not be named. the upside of it was, for 2 weeks, I felt like I almost approached your daily viewing habits because I was stuck in my bedroom. I couldn't get out. I mean, I can get out to go to the bathroom or go to the balcony, or, I took a walk here and there with masks on, of course. But it was just like I'd fall asleep whenever, I'd wake up, I'd start watching something on the laptop and maybe watch a couple somethings on the laptop and take a nap and get back up and watch something on the laptop. I watched a lot of movies in those 2 weeks. And after, the year of work that I've had and just how intensive that job can be, it was very nice don't tell the union this. It was very nice to take 2 weeks and basically lay down for a while.
Yes, I bet.
But Carlos, how are you doing? I feel like we haven't spoken in a while, but I'm pretty sure we just spoke like a week or two ago.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. I feel like we did talk recently, but well, I know we will be talking again soon, like a few times actually this week.
Yeah, I think the last thing we did was the Kingdom, right? Or Kingdom?
Yes, yes. I think that's why it felt like we maybe talked because more recently we did a lot of, well, it's only three episodes of those, but it, you know, we were recording for like maybe a week or two consecutively.
Yeah. Yeah. We were,
yeah.
Sorry. I just went to close the door. We were recording like, I think once we just recorded it and then we recorded again 3 days later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm doing great. I'm actually doing a lot of work on the podcast, like releasing episodes consistently, which is great. And I have a schedule and everything. So I'm really proud of that going into 2023. Last year I released like, I don't know, I don't even know, like 12 episodes all year.
More than me.
It might've even been less. It might've been like 10. It was just so hard. There was so many hiatuses and just, I'm going to do this. And then something would happen. But now I'm back into it and I'm excited to be back onto the show because, yeah, this is always a fun show to do.
Okay, so I know I suggested everybody make a top five. Did everybody make a top five?
I have a top 10 and then I have special mentions I have horror films from 2021 that I saw in 2022 for the first time.
Ooh.
And I have a few films from 2020 that I saw for the first time in 2022 that I really liked. So I've got about 20 films, maybe 22 or 23 films, but
I have a top five and a few honorable mentions.
Well, I figure we'll just have kind of a free flowing conversation of, of things that we saw that will go outside of our list of top five. But I also thought, and let me know how you guys feel about this, that the best way to do this might be to kind of just like do a round robin talking about our top five. I don't have mine ranked. I just have five that I really liked.
I have mine ranked, but those rankings can go out the door anytime. So, but I do have them ranked 1 through 10 at least.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about that, you guys, both of you?
Yeah, that sounds good. I don't know if mine are actually ranked. I'm like, I know I kind of ranked them, but I might just say they're not ranked just because I'm indecisive.
Okay. Yeah. I can't. I know what my number one is.
Yeah.
But other than that, like
I know what your number one is too.
Well, I know. I've talked about it quite a bit. I have a feeling my favorites might not be. No, I don't know. I think there's one wild card on there that might surprise people, but I think everything else in my list, people are like,
do you want to start there with the wild card? No. Or are you saving that?
No, I'm going to save it. Well, if we're going to go, I guess it's my show. I'll assert my privilege and go first with, I'm just
yes,
gonna,
please.
My top five is not ranked, but I'm going to just go with the one that I know is number one. Because it,
you don't want to build up.
No, I because I think somebody else is going to bring it up, and I just might as well.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I like this because I know what my number one is. Yeah. So perfect.
So my number one of the year is Jordan Peele's Nope.
Yeah, that's also my number one.
It may be. It's in kind of a rotating top three. The ranking goes up and down a little bit, which is why I don't like ranking my lists because I can never, I'm so indecisive. Like my top three for the year are Nope, Moon Age Daydream, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. And they're movies, both movies I've seen multiple times. Nope.
Oh, and okay, you confused me. Your top three overall for the year. Not
yes. Yes.
I was Moon Age Daydream a horror movie, but yes.
Yeah, for the like. Nope is pretty much like it's always been in the mix. When I saw Everything Everywhere, I was like, oh, nothing's going to beat that this year. And then Nope came along and I was like, okay, but still Everything Everywhere. And then I watched Nope one more time in IMAX, and we rented it and watched it at home. And it kind of like, it never diminished on any repeat viewings. There was nothing I was ever like kind of tired of and waiting for the next thing to happen. I think I said it to you, Rick, that I kind of feel like it's Jordan Peele's Jaws. And I don't mean to like say that Nope is like, you know, the quality of Jaws or the import of Jaws. I just mean that it's like, it's a pretty good adventure story, like an adventure thriller horror film, if that's what you want. It's got a great family angle. It's a little bit shaggy at times in a way that I like, because everything, even the shagginess of it, is kind of underlying the themes of the movie. Like everything in it works to kind of like be a different aspect of what the point of the movie is, I guess, is how what I'm trying to say. Like, it's just, it's something that you can dig into if you want, and if you don't, you can just enjoy like the really awesome design and fun filmmaking of it. Like, there's some really great sequences in that movie. I don't know. You said it was your number one too, Carlos. I'm not sure if you've got it on yours, Rick, but what did you guys feel
about Nope? It's number two on mine, but it's number two for a reason.
Yeah, what did you say, Rick?
I said it's number two on my list for the top 10 horror, but it's number two for a reason. So.
Oh, okay.
It can't be number one for a very good reason. Well, for two very good reasons.
I think I know what your number one is, but we'll get to you next.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Nope. It's quite an interesting movie. I don't know, it plays out in a sort of mysterious way, and the way that the movie begins is sort of not misleading, but it's a sort of like the center point of this theme through the entire thing, of the events that we're about to watch unfold, as well as learning of the story through flashback of TV episode taping gone wrong. But it what I find the most interesting too is the relationship between the two main characters in the film, just in the way that they interact, because they're so distant and cold towards each other, not in a purposeful way, but that relationship, there's like a strained relationship there. And it's sort of how these like people come together to this incredible situation that seems like it's just something random that just happens to them. But I mean, it is, but there's so much more to it, and how it all connects this small area and the small town. It's a very mysterious movie. There's something about it, and there's so much more that on each viewing, it gets better. I've only seen it twice, but I remember from the first time, there's almost like, for me, a sort of like, I almost didn't like the movie. Like, I didn't really quite understand it. But I kept thinking about it, and I know I wanted to see it again. I knew that it wasn't that I disliked it. There was just something that I couldn't quite understand. And going into that second viewing, it made a lot more sense. I mean, I think that obviously I need to watch it again, but it definitely does get better with time.
Yeah, I agree. I left the movie, like we saw it, we talked about it a bit on your show. We saw it at just like an AMC, and we mm-hmm. liked it a lot. But then over the next few days, I kept thinking about it. Like, I was working out in kind of the foothills area, not really foothills. It was closer to Santa Clarita. But it's an environment that looks a lot like the environment in the movie. And I was working out there, and I'm working outside and get the hills. And I found myself just looking at clouds and like kind of just like thinking about the movie and watching the clouds move, and like it really did stick with me.
You really don't know clouds at all?
I don't know clouds at all.
Okay, it's an old song, you probably don't know it.
No, I guess not. Sorry. Sometimes you throw out a reference that I'm, well, a lot of times you throw out a reference and I feel like I should get it. And then but it just makes me draw a blank. But no, the movie, I kept thinking about it and I kept going like, now, why was that in the movie? And then I would come up with a reason for it and I'd be like, oh, that's really cool. And so then we thought like, well, we both kind of had this experience, Amber and I, and we thought, let's go see it again. So we saw it in IMAX, and the IMAX, like, obviously, you know, a better picture and sound, but there's stuff that I missed in the AMC because it was just like the audio mix maybe wasn't loud enough and the projection was too dim. So there's moments in that movie that I thought you weren't supposed to understand what's being said, but then seeing an IMAX, I'm like, oh, you hear the dialogue there. That gives away something I thought was supposed to be a surprise later on. That's pretty cool. Or when Jean Jacket is flying around and OJ is hiding in the barn at night and the camera's kind of panning through the sky. When I saw that in AMC, nothing. You could only see clouds. And I thought it was supposed to just be like, you know, mysterious that way. When I saw it in IMAX, I was like, oh no, there's Jean Jacket. You can see him clearly. so then seeing it the second time and you just get a little bit more of the story and the image. And I was like, oh, this is great. And then, you know, you're picking up on other little things that kind of like tie into the movie. And then we rented it because we're like, oh, we got to show Pandora, but Pandora doesn't want to go to the theater. So we paid the $20 to rent it again. So yeah, no, it's a movie that I'm like, I can't wait to buy it. I'm going to order that 4K watch it again.
Yeah, I really wanted to rewatch it again before this recording, but I just couldn't find the time. But yeah, it's a great one. This one is also in my top 10 of the year overall.
Yeah. I agree. It is also a movie in which most criticisms I've seen levied at the movie are wrong. Like, I've never seen this before. It's like artist subjective. If you don't like it, like, you know, you don't have it as high in your list, I'm not blaming it. Like, I'm not going to say like you're wrong about that. But the people who are like, this movie is bad because of this, every one of their arguments is just completely wrong. I've never had that where it's just, I don't just disagree. I can probably prove why your thinking on this subject is wrong.
Just like misunderstanding of the film.
Yeah. Cause
yeah.
And I hear Jordan Peele talks about this. There's shots in the trailer that aren't in the movie and they were filmed, but there was like this whole subplot about the girl child actor on the sitcom that we see the taping of.
Yeah.
There was a subplot of a guy going to that taping, planning to kidnap her. And you see a shot of him walking on the studio backlot in the trailer. And I kind of want to see that. I kind of don't, because it boggles my mind that something so major could be removed from this movie, because in my mind, everything in the movie is kind of like feeding into the point of the movie, that to think that he had so much extra stuff and he whittled it away to this is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. Like how he's able to focus it to just, you know, these moments.
Well, I'm going to say that Nope is number two for a reason, and that reason is myself. Because when the trailers came out, my immediate sense from the trailers was that, oh, he's M. Night Shyamalan himself. Because, you know, Shyamalan had Sixth Sense and he had Unbreakable, and then The Village came out. And,
well, Signs in between.
What's that?
Signs was in between.
Signs, yeah. Okay, there's Signs. Okay, so he came out with a few, but it was The Village that kind of took him down a little bit because people were really disappointed by it. And the trailer looks exciting, and then you get to the movie, and it was just kind of like, ah. I thought, oh, man, he's building up, but he's not showing anything in the trailer. I don't think he has anything, right? I don't think he has anything yet because he's not showing anything, you know? And I was just kind of like, and so I got into my mind that he had Shyamalan. And mind you, I like a lot of the recent stuff Shyamalan does. And I actually liked The Village. So I'm not one of the people who didn't like it, but there were a lot of people who had an outcry against it because of the ending and all that stuff and what it was revealed to be. So I was thinking, oh man, I don't know if he's got anything here. I think, and I wasn't exactly wowed by the trailer anyway. So I was just kind of like, I don't know. I'll wait and see, you know, that sort of thing. And then I got the movie. And the thing is, I agree with everything you guys have said about the about the movie. I agree with everything you said about it. But the reason it's my number two is because another movie has my heart at number one. So, Aaron, you want to guess what it was?
Oh, I want to circle back to Nope in a minute, but I am going to guess that your number one is Pearl.
It is absolutely Pearl. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I'm wholeheartedly behind this decision.
Okay. So go ahead and let's finish the Nope discussion before we move to Pearl.
Oh, well, I just wanted to say about my personal experience watching the movie is it's interesting you brought up Shyamalan, because I always go into a movie thinking that Nope and the way it's built up, thinking that there is something different, that it's not going to just be, evil aliens or whatever. I always think it's going to turn out that the aliens are actually either good, or they just didn't know what they were doing, or they don't care. We're ascribing these evil intentions to something that isn't actually evil.
Right.
Which you could say about Nope, because it's just an animal.
That's where I thought people were going to turn on him, was because it would do something like that. And then he'd go, when The Village is in The Village is revealed to be bleh, it's like, okay, it's not really monsters and all, it's like, so people get disappointed by these things. And that's what I thought was going to happen in Nope, is it was going to be revealed to be something that was not a monster, but something, more human or generic or something like that. And it was going to, that's what I, and so I'm pleased with the way it turned out. And I really do love the movie. And I can't wait to watch it a zillion times over the next few years. But it's at number two for a very good reason.
Yeah,
and well, most of my own fault for having those blinders on me, going in. So,
well, I will say that so I expected that it was an alien. I thought he's not cheating us on this, but I thought it was going to turn out that the alien was maybe benevolent, right? And that the death of the dad
that falls in the same category I was talking about, where people would be disappointed.
I'm building up to what happened. So this feeling, or this kind of suspicion, went away the moment you see what happens at Jupiter's Claim, and that scene, it may seem silly to say this, but at that scene, my stomach dropped. And I felt bad in a way that I was not expecting to for the next half hour of the movie, where
my jaw dropped. I was just like, what?
I wasn't just surprised. I felt emotionally awful. I was really affected by that scene. And it's that close up of that one woman, right? As they're all kind of going along that line, and I don't know. I just I felt it so viscerally what that would obviously not what that feels would feel like, but just I kind of just mentally was in there with them, and it did not feel good. And I it's one of the more effective moments I've had in a movie this year.
It is definitely shocking and kind of awe-inspiring.
That whole third act for that film is pretty great. I think that's where
they Jaws, fishing
adventure. Oh my gosh.
Them trying to get a picture of that alien,
Yeah.
It's such a nice buildup to that too.
No, it's great. And I mean, watching it again, watching the just the language that he uses, that he's we call them the viewers. And somebody pointed out that the alien masks that Jupe sells look like those the film Angels? Canisters for the cameras on the sitcom.
Right.
It's
oh, that's true. You're right. Yeah, the tripod, the tri-lens thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Like we've kind of spoiled some of the stuff that wasn't in the trailer, but I do want to leave some more of the discussion to some of the, you know, nuance and everything to a later date. But I could see doing an episode on this movie later this year.
Oh yeah.
So.
Okay, so yeah, Pearl. Let's talk about that, because I would love to talk about these films.
Okay, well, yeah, because I'm going to say right now, Pearl is at number one and X is at number three for me. So, it's hard to talk about one without the other.
Yeah, it is.
Pearl is the second film, even though it's the prequel of the trilogy. It's the second film in being made, but both were released in the same year. And I feel it's the stronger film overall. And I think part of it is X is more of a straight slasher, and but with, you know, some very surprising elements in it. But Pearl is a character study, and it's a very disturbing one. And I just was astounded by Mia Goth. I just, you know, because she plays two characters in X. And, you know, the old lady and then, you know, one of the porn actresses. But in Pearl, she plays the old lady when she's young, like 60 years earlier than the story in X. And it is just a riveting performance. And the film has, like, I think one of the greatest closing shots I've ever seen in a film. And so disturbing.
We because that closing shot goes through the end credits, and we just sat
all
there.
The way. Yeah,
we sat there watching it, and it would, like, the reaction would change. It would be like laughter to oh my god, like, fuck.
And she is a fractured psyche, and she, I mean, it's just the fact that it's not a free shot; it's her just maintaining that pose for like 3 minutes and just freaking the hell out of me.
Yeah, it was intense. Pearl, I liked X, I liked Pearl. Pearl is on my list as well. Like I said, it's not ranked in the order I wrote them. It's
just so rich.
What?
And there's so many just levels to her character.
Oh yes,
and I just love the world they craft in the, you know, during, you know, it's during World War One, and it's just so detailed, and then there's just such weird scenes that she gets involved in, like the cornfield scene, and you just realize this girl is just off her rocker, but she can hold it together for just a little while, and then she just starts going off her nut again, but not in a murdery way at first, just, you know. Just she has no central point that she can call safe, you know what I mean? And every aspect of her life is screwed up in some fashion where she cannot get a break. And even when she does, she makes trouble for herself. And I just found it astounding.
Yeah, it's great. She has that one unbroken monologue late in the movie.
And amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it goes on for so long, and just you get the sense of how unmoored this character is and how desperate she is for some source of security, something that she can cling on to, and how the feeling that everything that she kept grasping at was taken away from her right as she got it. It's a great performance. It's one of two, like, stunner monologues in my top five this year.
Honestly, I am upset. I am very upset that there was no Oscar talk for her. And I can't.
Same, yeah.
I am so upset by this, because to me, it is the best female performance that I've seen of the year.
Oh, yeah?
Bar none, yeah. Except for maybe Michelle Yeoh. But, yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of them. Like, Michelle Yeoh is really good. what was I going to, I was just, of course, Ana de Armas and Blonde, a movie that could be considered a horror movie in some aspects.
I considered a horror movie, and I also considered putting it into my top 10 just to piss people off. Not that they're listening to this, but, you know, I considered putting it in there because it does, it works better as a horror movie than it does as a biopic. And because I feel that its purpose as a film is as a horror movie. I feel very strongly that that was Dominic's intent, is that it comes off like, as I had described it to you a couple of times, I call it Lynchian. It's got that, just the feel of his darker work, you know, and it does. I feel the movie starts out, and I think that's what puts people off, is that it really allows her no joy at all in her life. And that might have been a mistake on his part, but not if his purpose was to actually make it look like her whole life was a horror movie. Like,
I do think she was given some joy, and it was in the completely fabricated thruple with her and Chaplin's kid and
probably Chaplin Jr. and
like that completely imagined scenario was like the only.
They were friends of hers, actually, but I mean, okay. But those two guys were friends of hers, and they were very close knit friends. But there is no evidence that there was a threesome between them.
Yeah, but that's all
Dominic's invention.
That was like the only happiness in her life for that movie. And
right. Well, I mean, you know, she thinks there's happiness at many, many different turns, but each time, like DiMaggio, he just beats the shit out of her. You know, I mean, Arthur Miller, he can never satisfy her. You know, it's like there's no point. I mean, we see the film starts and her mother's a maniac, tries to kill her. there's the fire, her mom goes to an asylum. I mean, it's just nonstop, you know, just terrible things happening to her all the way, even up to and including making it to Hollywood, where she's got to like blow every guy casting her in a movie. So
it's rough. I was just talking to Carlos about this earlier today. He has not seen the movie yet.
Update, I did watch the first half hour earlier.
Oh shit. Yeah. Okay.
And so far, I mean, the movie that like the opening does set, I feel like it's setting the tone for the rest of the movie. But I'm not, I get where the director's going with this. Like, I understand. Like, I'm like in it more than most people maybe, but I'm looking forward to finishing the rest of the film.
Yeah, I was talking to Carlos earlier that I kind of want to do an episode about it, but also that would require watching the movie again, and I'm not sure I can do it again, even though I kind of loved it. It's just there's
a lot. You know who enjoyed finishing in the film? John F. Kennedy. So there we go. Hey. God
damn it. All right, my skin is crawling now. Let's get back to Pearl. This would actually make a very good... maybe not a good double bill, but thematically there's a similarity between Blonde and Pearl, and that it's like these two women who are kind of like, you know, desperate for security and have it seemingly taken away at every turn where it looks like they have found it.
Putting on a facade
to kind of like give them armor through it. Pearl was great. I loved immediately, because Amber and I watched both of these. X was our last movie of 2022, and Pearl was our first. The closing credits of X were going on as...
Your first of 2023.
2023, yes. The closing credits of X were going on while Midnight happened. And then we took a couple of minutes, and then we started watching Pearl.
Was that planned?
No, it was just like, hey, like Persephone fell asleep and Pandora didn't want to do anything. And so we're just like, well, let's watch X. We have access to it now. I've been wanting to watch it. And then we both liked it. And so we were like, well, let's watch Pearl. We got it right here. And we both liked Pearl a lot more. I mean, from the opening frame, I love just how bright and technicolor it is. And
It's such Wizard of Oz. It really is.
Yeah, it's such a different well, even got the Scarecrow. It's such
That's why I mentioned, because I think that's intentional, is to evoke a fantasy setting, you know, like that.
But it's such a different visual palette. And
oh yeah,
I gotta give it up for Ty West in this case, just to make two movies, and where the second one nobody even knows about, but it's done, and then to surprise people, like, there's a third one and here's a trailer for it, which I guess the third one is, they're still working on it. Sorry, I gotta sneeze.
Hold right on. The trailer is very spare. It's just, you know, hinting at the third one. So
I didn't get it because Amazon doesn't include the trailer. When it was in theaters, there was a trailer after the credits. That's not on Amazon.
Right.
But Ty West is a director who, in the, like, around 2007, whatever it was, like, he was somebody I thought was going to be, like, the great new horror director. House of the Devil, I loved. The Innkeepers, I loved even more. I went back and watched his earlier films, like The Roost and Trigger Man, and thought those were terrific. So I was so excited for where he was going. And then he made a couple of movies I just did not care for at all, and seemed to move over to TV. So when X came out and it looked good, I was very excited. And then, you know, it's terrific. And Pearl is terrific. So I'm very happy to see kind of Ty West is back, if for lack of a better word.
I feel like he's, like, fulfilled his promise with these two movies. Like,
yeah, no, I would agree. Like, I was kind of expecting a little bit of more of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre riff from the trailers for X. X turned out to not be really at all what I expected. Go ahead. Terms of, like, the characters, like how the characters interact and what the story is. Like, obviously, I knew it was going to be about shooting a porno on a rented barn, but and I guess I could have figured out how it was going to play out, knowing Ty West's penchant for, like, kind of making a horror movie that only becomes a horror movie in the last, like, 15 to 20 minutes. I was still, like, very surprised, and it just kind of has
it has horror notes through much of the film, though.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially that, like, when she goes swimming and there's the unseen alligator. But no, it's kind of just a movie that was, like, visually pleasing. Like, it kind of, like, in a way that it just, like, the grain of the film and the color palette and the outfits, it was like I liked being in that world as kind of sweaty and dirty as it was at times.
I really, and, you know, I've seen a lot of 70s porn, so I knew the world they were in, you know, but it's what I grew up with, right? So, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, I saw all the major 70s porn movies, so.
All right, well, Carlos, you're up. What's your what's the, not in any order, but what's first on your list?
Well, I had an open number one, and since you were talking about Pearl and X, I actually had them both as my number four, and I just included them as one thing. I didn't want it to take up two spots, so I have Pearl and X in the number four spot. I really like how this, so far, both these movies are kind of like sort of a study on generational trauma. And there is that connection between the character, the Mia Goth's characters in both movies, and how that ties in together, and just how they're both sort of like these post-war era films in the U.S. And I love that in Pearl, like you guys were saying, the look is so bright and colorful, and it takes less on horror films, but more on, like, melodramas from that time, and, like, big studio melodramas, and just the look of it is just, it looks amazing. It's like almost to sort of deceive and throw you off, but then shows, like, horrifying moments and almost in two different ways in two different films, two different styles, almost showing the same kind of, like, hidden within the depths of, you know, the country, there's this sort of penchant for murder, and it all starts in the home and the interactions that we have with the people that are closest to us, and how sometimes, you know, you can try your best, but whatever, you know, you can't, you know, choose, you really can't choose family, you know. but it is really a great saga, I think, and I'm really looking forward to the third film.
I was going to say really quickly, I liked there's a moment in X where Pearl, the old lady, is watching Mia Goth have sex and kind of imagines herself in that scene, I think. Like, is that, am I misremembering it? Okay.
Nope.
And then you see in Pearl, the person she has the, you know, fling with, the one night stand with, the projectionist, it seems to be trying to get her to, like, to ease her into the idea of appearing in porn. And
That's Jenna Ortega.
Oh, in X, it's Jenna Ortega. She's watching have sex, right?
She's the gaffer. Yeah. Who finally decides to be in the porno movie.
Yeah. So, well, that's
the next thing. Mia Goth also plays Maxine, the one who really wants to be a porn star.
That's what I wanted to get to as well, is that there's an interesting take on, like, porn and women in porn in this, because Jenna Ortega is just like, yeah, I kind of want to try it. Can I? You guys look like you're having fun. I don't know. I don't know if that's not her stated reason, but it just is, it seems like she's like, huh, yeah, like maybe she just wants to test herself, but she's like, I want to do this.
And then the director gets peed off. Isn't the director who gets mad? Because
no, it's her, it's the sound, yeah, the director, that's the, right, sound, the director who's
the director gets mad, yeah,
who kind of like it, they're not really in a relationship, but I think maybe he thinks they are, or they kind of are, but they're not really
right
official. But he gets like really upset, and then in Pearl kind of like goes, and she like kind of instigates the relationship. The projectionist is obviously trying to hit on her, but she kind of like pushes things along a little bit, and like kind of isn't shocked or amazed by the porn that he shows her, that is just kind of like, huh, people do this kind of thing.
Right.
I can't quite pick up the thread of what I was going for there, but I thought it was interesting the way that pornography came into play in Pearl after being kind of a...
Well, I think it's going to cover all three films, because the third film is Max Steen become a huge star.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to that. I kind of just want to see where this character goes. I just want to see anything Mia Goth is in for now on.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. She's fantastic in both of these films.
And since it's now around to me,
she's also in A Cure for Wellness.
Mm, which I need to see again.
She's the main girl in it.
I feel she's like
in Suspiria.
Yeah. I feel like America did America really did a disservice to Gore Verbinski, because these days I really miss his large scale blockbuster weirdness. Like I miss that strain of just like oddball sensibility in the midst of a big tentpole blockbuster.
Right. Yeah.
Like I just think about, like, you know, the Pirates movies, whatever you want to say about them. I like all of the first three Pirates movies quite a bit. I like his Lone Ranger. I thought his Lone Ranger was really fun. Unfortunately,
I actually enjoyed the Lone Ranger, and a lot of people don't. And I'm just like, I don't get what you guys don't like about it. I think it's crazy fun.
Yeah. And then like, kind of like he went from that to Cure for Wellness, and neither one connected with anybody or major audiences, mass audiences. Oh, Rango, of course. Rango's great. The Ring. Anyway, mm-hmm. We're not talking about Gore Verbinski. He didn't have a horror movie out in 2022.
I was wondering why you were talking about him. It took me a while to realize he directed Cure for Wellness.
Yeah.
But I was saying to Carlos in the moment you weren't with us that I also had X on my list, but I kind of like, I was cheating a little bit because I did what he did where I put X and Pearl on at the same time. Cause it's like, I just knew that both of them were going to come up, but I had to talk about Pearl.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Pearl is definitely the stronger one of the two. I think Rick said that too.
Yeah. I put X number three after Nope. Cause I feel like X is really strong, but Pearl's an even stronger film. And I think it's going to be, I think it's just a classic performance. So yeah. I had to put it at number one because it's the movie that most moved me this year also.
I also Pearl, people are going to be talking about years from now. Like, Pearl's not going away.
Have you seen this crazy movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just going to get better with more viewings. It's just going to be like, oh, I need another dose of that. You know, it's like, I need another dose of crazy, but let's move on past these three movies right now. So
yeah, no, I'm gonna
you got a lot of other ones to hit.
I'm gonna go to my wild card, the one that I say it's a wild card because it's got a pretty low audience rating. Just I just found that out right now, like because I went and Googled the movie. But it's
audience rating on what?
It looked like that was well both IMDb and I think Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't discuss the RT.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like RT.
But it's another crazy movie that I think people who saw it are going to be talking about that has a like very strong female lead performance and a very jaw-dropping one take monologue in the middle of it. And I am talking about the movie Resurrection. I'm talking about the actress Rebecca Hall. And I am this movie, I know you've seen it, Rick. I don't know if you've seen it, Carlos. I didn't know what to think about it when I first saw it, but I knew it had shown me something I had never seen before. And for that, I was kind of grateful. It's a movie that stuck with me. Tim Roth is in it in the most, like, there's just something about him. Like, I like Tim Roth a lot, but every time you see him in this movie, and it's not like he's dirty or ugly. He's just Tim Roth. And like, you know, well-kept. There's something off-putting and gross about him in every scene that you see.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Have you seen it, Carlos?
No, but this was on my I wanted to watch this before this because I knew I'd like it, but I just never got to it. Yeah. I'm so excited now. I'm so glad.
Oh man, I want too much.
I was gonna say there's some things that might make certain people not like the movie. So right.
Yeah, it is
there's a matter of the subject matter. So
yeah, it is kind of a squirmy movie, but a lot of that squirmy is just like implied. There is a kind of a quote unquote gross out moment at the end of the movie, but the rest of the movie, it's all dialogue and just hearing people talk about this, and it's so like uncomfortable. And I was like watching it and I was just like, this movie, what the fuck?
That is on Shudder, right?
Yes, but okay. Rebecca Hall has a monologue that I mean, Rick knows it, but it's just like, it's crazy. Like she just says the stuff to somebody who is just like kind of asking, like, how was your day? And she goes on. And I don't know how much of this I want to talk about, but Margaret is Rebecca Hall's character name is Margaret, is kind of a professional woman. She has a daughter, an older teenage daughter. And one day she seems a little bit like a kind of like a controlling person, but otherwise like very pleasant, that she has a good relationship with the daughter. Then one day she sees Tim Roth and is convinced that he's this man that she had a relationship with 20 plus years or like earlier. And kind of everything starts to unravel. They have a couple of meetings and it becomes kind of a weird, like there's a weird dominant submission thing going on between the two of them. And he kind of, there's like some demands made on characters and they have to do some bizarre things. And it's unclear why. There is some stuff that is talked about in this movie that you think, oh, this must just be an allegory. This must just be like a story that's being made up by one of these characters. And it turns out like it maybe isn't. It's a wild movie. I'm not sure, like it is not for everybody. It's kind of on my list just for dint of having such great performances and being something I had never seen before. Just like the what this movie is about was kind of like, it was a moment where I was like, you can do that? You can make a story about this? Like a story where this stuff happens? It was kind of amazing.
It's a super strong movie. I can't say I enjoyed it, but
well, yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, yeah, it made even me squirm, and that's difficult sometimes. And I feel like maybe I didn't like it as much as I probably actually was. But the performances were what carried it for me. And honestly, it's a film that I really should watch a second time because it's in my top 10. I think I have it like a number 6, but I really feel like it warrants a second viewing, you know, at my earliest convenience, because I'm still working out some of what was going on in my head. But all I know is I was watching and going, Tim Roth is so creepy. It's like, she has got to get away from him, but she can't, you know. And it's just like it's a mind trip of a film. It really is, and it does deserve multiple viewings, and I need to give them to here in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, to say I enjoyed it would also be kind of a weird thing to say about this movie, but it, like, you know, sometimes you just like a movie that's kind of an experience that it is.
And there's another movie in my top 10 that's very like it as far as what goes on.
Okay.
Is just too creepy for me to handle easily in one session. You know, but do I want to watch it again? Because it just really upset me. And again, these things don't upset me normally like this.
Yeah,
but I don't know if you have it in your list, but it's Speak No Evil.
God, that's in your top 5?
It's in my top 10.
Oh,
it is 10. Actually, it's my number 5. Yeah, it's my number 5 movie.
Okay. It is not in my list, but I do want to talk about it. I don't know if you want to wait or you want to get into it right now.
No, we can wait. And actually, okay. I'm too far removed from it to really speak with authority on it, but all I know is that when I watched it, it just really, I was just like, oh my God, all through the movie. And again, I don't do that through movies normally.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to really throw me. And I was just like, holy crap, you know? And also, I don't really want to give away what goes on in it, because part of that oh crap feeling is getting there, you know? Is the payoff is getting to there, you know? It's like, it has to build for the viewer to really make it affect them, you know? So
that's true. So I don't know, maybe we'll just have a private discussion. Although we talked about it a bit when I saw it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually surprised it's not in your top 10.
Okay.
There's a lot of good movies this year.
We will get to why it is not in my top 10. Well, it's not in my top 5. But I didn't consider a top 10. There is a possibility it would be in it. There is also a possibility it would be in my bottom 10 for the year, which we will get into when
and knowing what I know about it, I would totally understand that.
So anyway, which one do you want to talk about? It is, you are up.
I'm up, or is the movie? My number 4 movie is Fresh.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, I just had a ball watching this movie, even though, you know, it's very, it's very much a Me Too type of movie. But just a date that quite satisfying for the viewer goes to hell, you know. And it just, girl gets picked up by a guy and then ends up being imprisoned by her, you know? So, and then he starts like eating various body parts of other victims he has captured. And it's just, that's it in a nutshell, but there's a lot more to it than that. But it's a crazy movie. It's sort of, I mean, it's very funny. It doesn't get described as a comedy, but there's a lot of laughs in it. I mean, they're very darkly humorous laughs, but as the film builds and builds and builds, and you realize what's going on, it's just, it's just a fun watch, you know, if you like creepy, gory thrills, you know, so.
Yeah, no, Fresh didn't make my top five, but it is, you know, one of the movies that I would refer to when talking about how good this year was for horror. I thoroughly enjoyed that one. I maybe don't have much, like, maybe it didn't make as much of an impression, so maybe I owe it another viewing. I mean, not that I'm like, I don't remember what the movie was, but I was like, I kind of remember watching it and going, yeah, that was pretty good. But I think maybe I will rewatch it. But because you're right, it was kind of like, yeah, well, it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best word for it is fun, even though it is, you know, about women trying to get their agency back and escape from this guy. And, you know, I mean, it's like, but so there's, you know, there's a lot of creepy stuff going on, but the guy deserves everything that happens to him. But yeah, but at the same time, you go, yeah, but that's what a horror movie is. It's like, you got to have fun sometimes. And even with all the gore and all the killing and all that stuff. So, you know, it's like, yeah, it's very enjoyable.
Yeah. Carlos, had you seen it?
That one I have not seen.
Okay. Yeah, it's on Hulu, right? That's good.
Yeah, it's on Hulu.
Yeah. I have heard of that one. I did want to see that.
Yeah, it's the guy, the villain is Sebastian Stan.
Oh, he's great. I love him.
He is great. And
he's an iTonya.
Yeah, we're used to him being a hero, right? You know, yeah. It's just like he's not a hero in this movie. Daisy Edgar Jones is the girl.
Oh, right. Yeah. Looking forward to that, too.
Excellent acting from both of them in this movie. So,
all right. Well, Carlos, you're up. What's next on the...
Let's see. I told you my number four was Pearl/X, so I'll go back down to my number five. And I have one that was a lot of fun, but also was kind of scary at times. I'm talking about Deadstream.
No,
Shudder. Oh, that's my God. Mine. I did not know much about this, and I kind of wish I had seen it. I think it played Beyond Fest, but I watched it on Shudder and I had so much fun. I was not expecting it to be as funny as it was and also as scary as it was. It's basically about this YouTuber who's a disgraced YouTuber who's trying to redeem himself by going to this haunted house and, you know, recording it for doing a live stream of this to redeem himself. And it uses that found footage style to its own advantage to really give you moments of like tense, like you're not sure what's going to happen, if it's really going to scare your pants or if it's really going to make you laugh. And I think that's part of the anxiety of watching this movie, because it could go either way and it's effective either way. And it's just a movie that's very fun and was surprising from beginning to end.
I agree. That movie was such a delight. Yeah. I watched it with Amber and our oldest daughter, who does not often watch movies with us, but came out for this one, and we were all laughing. We all, I think there were maybe one or two jumps, but we were all just like really into this movie. It's in my top five. I thought the performance, the main performance, which in a lot of these, they're pretty heavily improvised, and I'm not sure how much improvisation went into this. But if it was a lot of improvisation, the guy deserves a lot of credit, because he was very funny throughout the whole movie. And I kind of like for a while, like the trailer looked like it might be fun, but yeah. I was like, oh, some of the scary stuff looks really cheap as hell. But then when you actually see the movie and it kind of gets to like, you know, like almost Evil Dead 2 style, just like over the top, crazy splat sticky type mayhem. I was just like really along for the ride.
It's number 8 on my top 10. And I really enjoyed it when I watched it. And then the more I thought about it and then talked to you, Aaron, about it and just going, oh, you know, I had a ball watching that movie. The thing is, I went into it thinking I was not going to have a good time because I just thought it was going to annoy me. And at first, like the first 10, 15 minutes, I was kind of like, all right, it's kind of funny, but man, this guy's so annoying. And then he's like, oh, he's supposed to be annoying, so I'll just stick with it.
Whoa. Yeah.
And then I just kept going and going, and it just kept getting just funnier and funnier and crazier. And then, and Aaron's right, Evil Dead 2, that was my thinking, was it, the movie starts to, not that it's the Evil Dead in content or style, but it starts to ramp up and gets crazier and crazier, much like the Evil Dead movies. And it's exactly that feeling that I look for in movies sometimes, you know, or anytime is good in a movie for me. But that's the exact feeling I really want from a movie when I'm watching it. I want it to go that, it, you know, go that extra step, you know, go that, hit that extra gear, you know. And go to 11, you know. Yeah. So I want it to go to 11.
We talked about that a lot. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, but that's that feeling, and I got it from it, and I was very happy with it. And I really, again, I need to rewatch this. I need to rewatch most of these, but I have so many other movies to watch. But I really enjoyed Deadstream.
I will definitely be rewatching it. I'll be rewatching all of these, I think. We talk about that a lot, about movies that kind of you want to escalate, and maybe sometimes they reach a plateau. And that happens a lot for me, where I'm like, I'm really enjoying a movie and it reaches a plateau where I want it to accelerate. I want some things to happen. And then, you know, but for the end of the movie, it's just like, well, it's reached a level and it's maintained, and maybe it's fun, but it just feels a little unsatisfying that they couldn't keep going. And this one is one where I definitely felt satisfied with how they kept escalating right up until the end. This was a movie I kind of expected I would like a little bit, but I was very surprised by just how much. I mean, it made it into my top 5, and I wasn't expecting that when I first saw it.
Replay value is big for me when I kind of put my rating on a movie. It's like, if I watch a movie and I go, okay, that was good, you know, but I don't know if I need to see it again. You know, it's just like okay, I got it. And then it kind of ends up, you know, at a certain rating. But if it has that kind of extra step to it, and I go, oh yeah, you know, I can revisit this one a lot. That's what Deadstream ended up being, when I wasn't expecting it to even be mediocre. So, you know.
Well, you're not a big fan of found footage either. So that's kind of,
I am not a fan of found footage, though I occasionally see one that I like. And so again, I it's expectations, and I try to enter movies level-headed and at the same, you know, I mean, it's kind of impossible with some movies if you've been waiting for a Captain America movie or something like that. But I mean, it's like, so it's a little hard to temper expectations, but with most movies, I try to start them and just let them kind of flow over me. And this one, I'm glad I did, because, and I'm glad I stuck with it, because it paid off greatly. And so, yeah, really enjoy the Deadstream.
So wait, is it back to me now? I believe it is. We've been talking about stuff. So this is going to actually be the last one in my top 5, because we've talked about all the others. The next one I got is kind of a late addition, Dark Horse coming from the rear, I guess. It's a big movie everybody knows about, or horror fans know about.
Oh,
it's like I watched it late in the game, right? I watched it after the year had ended, and so this is probably the most recent viewing. But it is The Menu with Ralph Fiennes.
And I don't want you to say anything about it, because I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
Because I've been telling Jen for 2 weeks, do you want to watch the menu? And
I'll not say anything about it. Well, I got to say something, but I'm going to be very careful. it strikes a really nice balance between being very funny and very tense, that at one point in the movie, I was disappointed because something happens and I saw the rest of the movie unfold in my mind. And I was like, well, that's not as fun a movie as I've been enjoying, or that movie is not as good as the movie I've been enjoying so far. And I needn't have worried, because of the rest of the movie kind of, it isn't even a misstep. It's just something happens where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like where this goes. And it ends up being like, oh no, I love where this goes. So I want to say more about it. I will not, out of deference to you. It's just a movie that I found a lot to admire in both its message and its execution, and targets that it takes aim at. And I see we've lost Rick again.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen The Menu?
Yeah, actually, I watched it this last week. We're going to have to talk off air because I actually did not like the movie. Well,
whoa.
I started to enjoy it, and then I didn't really understand where it was going. And I didn't know. Well, no, I don't. Well, I'll keep it at that. Well, he left.
He left. So you go ahead and tell me. I can.
Here's the thing. I don't know if the movie is about food, if it's about art, if it's about rich people. And that's why during the middle of the movie, I was trying to figure out where it was going. And I couldn't, honestly, I didn't understand where it was going. And then where it ended up for me wasn't satisfying. Like, because I was still trying to figure out the movie, I could never catch up enough to really understand what was ultimately going on. When I started, I was in, I was like, okay, I see, I think I know where this is going. And then it completely did not, and I don't know, it just fell flat for me. I might have to watch it again. There was a point in the movie where I just like lost interest, and I was really like invested the first half.
We'll talk off air.
Yeah.
I'm letting Rick in now.
Okay
sorry Rick, that took a little longer, Rick, because we were talking about The Menu and we didn't want you to hear it.
We're done.
Cool.
So that's The Menu. Who's up next? Rick, I believe it's your turn.
Yeah, let me pull my notes back up here. Okay, so my number seven on my list, that's the next film that's on, because I've, like, all the other ones we've talked about are actually on my list here in various spots. My number seven on my list is a really freaky little movie from Finland called Hatching.
Ooh, okay. Oh.
So freaking creepy.
Yeah,
it's the one that's got, it's a girl finds an egg and she keeps it. She probably shouldn't have.
Oh man, I forgot about that movie. That was one of the first movies. Yeah, I saw it earlier in the year, like as a digital, like Sundance thing during Sundance. It was wild. I'll be honest though, I wasn't paying much attention because I was on a date. But the movie was wild, and yeah, it was pretty good. I did enjoy what I did see. Yeah. But I totally forgot about that. Oh
yeah,
my God.
And that one astounded me. I was like, yeah, this is a one, it's a monster movie. Two, it's a body horror movie. So
yeah,
both of those things together, that's like Reese's peanut butter cup for me. So
did you see it, Aaron?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, this was one.
Okay, yeah.
I really love too. It didn't quite make my list. I'm looking now at Letterboxd because I think I didn't really write anything down. But did I miss it on here? But no, I really liked it. I did think at one moment about whether or not to put it on there. It just didn't make the list. But I think it would probably make my top 10. Yeah, there it is. But yeah, in my top five, it didn't quite make it, but I remember watching it. It's one of the movies where once it was over, or maybe even like right before it ended, I was like, I got to text Rick. I got to see if you've seen this movie, because it was crazy. The monster was really cool. I thought it looked awesome. And like, I don't know. You know, I sometimes have a problem with, and I feel bad about this. I feel a bit like Siskel in that I kind of sometimes have a problem with kids in danger in movies.
I know you do, which is what we're talking about in that other movie.
I do my best to not hold that against the movie, because it is simply I have to take that the movie is trying to do something, and the movie is not like a personal attack or anything like that. The movie's not about me. Or not necessarily directed at me. The movie doesn't know my situation. So I don't go and like, oh, this movie has kids in danger. It sucks. I just have to it is something that is in my mind. And Hatching certainly kind of like hit some of those triggers, but I still was like, this is really cool. I like this a lot. Whereas one of the other movies on your list, I did not have quite the same reaction to.
Right. Yeah. And we already discussed that one. Yeah.
Well, no, we kind of didn't. We were going to discuss it later, but.
Right. Well, we don't need to discuss it. I think we've already kind of hit on it. I just don't want to say too much about that one, because there's a couple major twists in it, and it's better if you go in cold. So,
okay. Well, do we even want to say what the movie is, in case of like, because we're kind of being vague about it?
We already talked about it. I already said the name.
Okay, listener. So go back and listen if you don't know what we're talking about.
It was my number five movie.
It's okay.
What was the movie again? What was the title?
Speak No Evil.
Yeah.
Did you see that one, Carlos?
No, but I think you told me about it.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to see that.
I know people are, people get squirmy about, oh, you killed the dog or you killed a kid. Yeah. It's like, you know what? That dog and those actors, that dog and that kid, they're actors too. You know, it's like, it's a part in a movie. It's not real life. I mean, and for me, it makes me worry about those people, because they can't differentiate between real life and a movie, you know? So it's acting, it's a story. You know, okay, I'm sorry that a kid got killed in it, but it's it's the way things are. So, you know, it's like, it's supposed to be horrific, you know? Yeah, it's terrible when a kid dies, like, you know, in one of these movies, but it's a horror movie. It's like,
no, I get that. I get that.
I'm not yelling at you. I'm just saying I know people who are even
squirmier. He's yelling at me. No.
There are people who are squirmier about it. I mean,
I've seen my fair share of it. I just think I'm in a point in my life where, like, I don't know if I can see more of that, especially now that I actually have kids of my own.
Yeah.
It's like my worst nightmare. I think, like, if I really think about it, it's like, and just seeing it just gets you on, it gets me at least.
Right.
You know, really negative, like, thought spirals, like, oh my God, that could have happened to me. And it's, yeah, but I get it. I mean, I probably will watch it. I just need to be in the right headspace.
Well,
it's
not and watch that.
Okay.
But to touch on that and why it, and again, I'm not saying that, you know, like Aaron's a wuss or anything like that, because again, he's a dad, I'm not. And so I totally understand that it might be a more touchy subject for him than it is for me. Or for, you know, whoever, you know, so it's, so it doesn't bother me, you know, it's just like, some things bother me, some things don't bother me that bother him, and there are some things that don't bother him at all that bother me, so, you know, it's like, it's, everybody's his own, and also everybody has their backstories, you know, has things that have happened to them that might affect them differently than for other people, so, you know, if you've been subject to, you know, sexual abuse or child abuse or rape or anything like that, you're not going to want to watch movies about any of those things. So it's like,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like,
it depends. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah.
I will say, like, I'm not hardline where a movie can't be good or it's like I see it and I'm like immediately like, oh, that movie sucks. Because the movie we're talking about, Speaking of Evil, is a movie that's incredibly well made. It's incredibly effective, does everything it set out to do. And I hated how it made me feel.
Yeah, and I, so, the thing is, I agree with you about that. It's like, and, oh, I don't like this feeling, you know?
And I realize that's what the movie is trying to do, and so I have to respect them and applaud them for it. It just it did not make my top five in a year which I enjoyed all these other movies. because Speaking of Evil, I'm not going to talk about the plot at all, but it depressed me. And then 2 days later, I woke up in the middle of the night and I was thinking about that movie and I could not sleep. I just kept running that movie over and over in my head. And that in many regards, that is the mark of an excellent piece of art. I'm just saying, like,
it wasn't in your head. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah. But also part of me is glad that it is, because I'm glad that I experienced it. You know, I'm glad that I put myself through that, but also, you know, like, these are five movies that I really genuinely enjoy and will rewatch, and several of them are very fun. And so Speak No Evil is a movie that gets a theoretical A+ from me. You know, it's like, good job, movie. I never want to see you again.
Fair enough. Who's next?
Am I
next?
You, yeah.
Okay, so my number three movie is
how are you still only number three?
Well, I thought we were doing the top five, right?
Yeah.
But I see. I'm doing from five to, and then I was from five to one. I mean, I already mentioned my one, but I'm just like filling it in. My number three movie of the year is Barbarian, a movie that I spent a lot of time at the movies this summer, and I saw this trailer so many times.
Yeah.
And that's always a problem, because a lot of trailers do give a lot away. And I felt like this trailer might be doing that, but this trailer did not do that, because I was surprised every step of the way during this movie. There was never a moment where I really knew where the film was going, and then it wraps up, I think, really beautifully. Barbie, it was so much, it was so fun, it was terrifying, it was funny. There's a lot of, this is just like, I don't know, there was just so much going on in this film. It was just so good. It was entertaining in a way. It was wild. It was like such a great experience to just hearing everyone's response to this movie is like so joyous, just because a lot of it I wish I would have finished, I would have watched it on the big screen, but also kind of not, because I missed out on a lot of the really terrifying moments that really work in the living room. Just as much as I'm sure they work on the big screen.
Okay, wait, we're talking Barbarian?
Yes.
Okay, I did see it in theaters, but unfortunately it was kind of a small audience. Sorry, it was a small audience, so I didn't get like the big crowd reaction thing, but that movie didn't make my list, even though I really, really loved it, I loved the experience of it, because it's a movie that this is an example of a movie that to me reaches a level and doesn't accelerate past it. And that level is enjoyable, but at the end of it, I just kind of felt like that entire last act, I was kind of like, I want it to go a little bit bigger here. And it's not. Yeah. And what happened is great. Like, I love, like, Justin Long's character is such a piece of shit, and it's so much fun to watch him in this movie. Spoiler, I guess, because for a while they weren't even showing that Justin Long was in this thing. But I love how his character is repeatedly given the chance to do the right thing and always chooses not to.
Man,
he's such a fascinating character type. that I'd hate in real life, of course, but it's kind of entertaining to watch them be put through the ringer in a film. But yeah, I kind of wished by the end of it, I was just left a little dissatisfied. Not enough to keep it out of the favorites of the year, just not in my top five. But I will say, whatever disappointments I had in the ending were completely undone, all forgiven by the final cut to credits in that movie, which is so awesome that it then again bums me out that they go back to it. I just wish they had just cut to credits and that's the end of the movie. They hadn't given us any more little glimpses that they do. I was like, oh, movie, you're so perfect right now. Just stop.
Yeah. Yeah, you really hate that, that last kind of moment. There's a lot of horror movies that are just sort of taken away from that last final moment, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was good.
I really like this. Yeah.
My feelings are similar to Aaron's in that I really enjoyed the film, and I rate it very highly. I just was left the way people were reacting to it. I watched it and I kind of went, well, okay, I get all that. But yeah, I'm a little tiny bit disappointed, even though I really did enjoy it.
Right.
And this, I felt the same way about Smile also, where it's just like, oh yeah, this is really creepy and cool. And I'd also just little smidge of disappointment with it. So.
Yeah, actually, I watched that one recently. I didn't rank it because I felt it was way too long. It could have been better if it wasn't so long, because actually, the concept was cool and I was really digging it. But there was a moment where I was like, dude, these 40 minutes could be thrown out the window.
Yeah, yeah. Cut out at least 20 minutes. Yeah. It has the Apatow disease.
Yeah. It spends too much time building tension. And it's like, okay, you've already built it. I'm in. I'm already kind of scared. You don't need to keep going. Just get to the action now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked Smile, but it was kind of we've seen, or maybe not everybody has seen, but it's just it's so much a Japanese horror movie, you know, like the way that it operates, like The Ring or yeah. or Ju-on right, yeah. or something. And so it's something that I like, but I've seen before, and I thought the movie was good, but it wasn't unique enough to really rank higher than oh, that was enjoyable. I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I think a different director with that same script could have been something, because it doesn't really stand out stylistically, or but like you're saying, the Japanese component actually makes it stand out from a lot of the Hollywood horror by not being an actual Japanese, you know, horror film, but sort of paying homage or being influenced by that.
I totally get why it was kind of a sensation, why people got into it. It's kind of a movie that I understand, if people aren't watching the you know, horror from around the world at the you know, just immersed in it, maybe. I don't know.
It's not bad. It's a good movie.
That sounds kind of condescending. It is good. It's good, but it's not.
It is good for the most part. It's not a bad movie. I was invested the nearly 2 hours in the film. I just had problems with that running time, but there's a good movie there. There's a lot to like and enjoy.
Yeah. So have we all gone through our top fives, or is there more?
I have one more in my top five.
And Rick?
We've gone through my top 10. So. I still have my number 10. I still have my number 10 we haven't touched on yet.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you guys, you want me to touch on it or?
Yeah, go for it.
Because I want to know if you guys have seen this movie yet. And it's a movie from Canada. It's an Inuit horror film.
Oh.
Called Slashback.
I have been waiting to watch that with Amber.
I have not seen that.
So it's low budget. It's filmed on Baffin Island. It's a sci-fi alien monster movie. That the special effects are not the greatest, but also cool at the same time. It has a really weird feel to it you don't get from any other movie. And it's about a bunch of teenagers fighting monsters. And it's got heart, and the kids are fun to to hear them talking to each other, and it's all Inuit kids, you know, and just on this small town on the island, and something happens, and you know, there's like a polar bear that wanders around, and it's obviously not a correctly functioning polar bear. There's something wrong with it, and it turns out to be an alien, and they have to figure out how to fight this thing. So it's I certainly saw better movies this year as far as quality goes, but I just was very intrigued by it and had a great time watching it. And the fact of the matter is, I see so many of these movies that just make me go, you know, seen this again. And this just had that little something extra that just made it a delight to watch, you know. So, and nice to see something from not just another culture, but indigenous cultures that's like not just, you know, a rural, you know, drama or something like that, you know, or kids sitting around drinking. I mean, though there are kids sitting around drinking in this one, but there's definitely partying going on, but it's just nice to see something of this, you know, culture, you know, that I really enjoyed, and it's a horror movie. So there you go.
Yeah, no, that's one I'm really looking forward to. But I know I have not seen it. I know Amber would be interested in it, and we're, you know, we have other stuff we're watching. we try to get stuff in every week, but it's going to maybe wait a little bit.
And I talked too long.
Oh. Well, we can wrap up soon because we've gone through our lists, but anybody have any honorable mentions to go?
Well, I have one more to mention in my top five.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. My number two is The Black Phone. Okay. I mean, I'm sure everyone saw that. A lot of people saw that. But this is Scott Derrickson, again, with Ethan Hawke, who gives a great performance in this. And I just really liked the vibe and feel of this movie. It felt like a stranger's, like something for the Stranger Things crowd, but like slightly above that, you know, in intensity. I thought it was pretty cool. And it touches on some, you know, some domestic stuff and abuse, child abuse stuff. But like overall, I really like this production. I thought it was really good. I saw it a couple times in theaters. And I don't know, maybe it was like because I really like Ethan Hawke and that performance just kept sticking in my head. And this is like made me really appreciate Ethan Hawke as an actor and just like the type of performances that he takes on.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke is like the secret MVP of genre films around the world. Like
he
kind of loves throwing himself into these movies. Like the crazier they are, he's like kind of has no. I mean, he went through a period where he seemed like a real douchebag, but he's really seems like he's got no ego about it. He just will throw himself into anything that looks fun.
Yeah.
And
he was in the first Purge.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That didn't really require much of him, but.
True.
There was a time in my life that I wished that Ethan Hawke had been taken in a Purge. Yeah. Because I, coming out of Reality Bites, I hated that movie and I hated him. And I just, you know, I disliked Dead Poets Society. I just really hated a lot of stuff that he was in. And I found, but then I saw the Before Sunrise, Before Midnight, all those movies, and I love those. And so I kind of like started to kind of figure out, oh, okay, I do like him, you know, I do like him in some stuff, you know, but, I finally figured out, yeah, okay, yeah, he's decent, and he's actually a pretty good writer, and so I got over my initial dislike of him. I still really hate Reality Bites.
I think he went through a period in the 90s and maybe early 2000s where he was very much a capital A artist, the stuff that he was writing, and he just kind of seemed very, very pretentious. But I don't know what. Now he just
still,
seems like
he still is a little pretentious, but
but he also has a like oh, this is fun, making art attitude that like right, you know, yeah, you hear yeah. him, you hear him talk about being in a Marvel project, and you know, like the opinions, everybody has to have an opinion on Martin Scorsese's opinion on Marvel movies, and
right.
he seems very like very measured and like, you know, like, oh yeah, people work on these, they're fun, like they're, but they're not the same, like the same thing that Martin Scorsese is doing. And I don't know, he seems like he's settled into middle age.
He's got it together. And so yeah, and I actually did it. I did like The Black Phone. I just feel it kind of falls apart on examination.
Well,
a little bit, and so it didn't quite make my list, even though it is my, you know, I certainly rated it highly and did enjoy watching it. And I, you know, but it's just, you think about it too much, it kind of falls apart. But
what I was gonna say is that it also is not in my list, even though I love Joe Hill, I'm a big fan. You know, that the story collection, the short story collection this comes from. Scott Derrickson as a director is pretty hit and miss with me, but he did some movies that I really respect a lot and find very effective. This movie was good. And this is what I'm saying when I talk about how 2022 was an especially strong year for horror, is that even the movies I was not...
The Black Phone was actually a 2021 movie.
Well, is that a wide release or is that a festival release?
It first played at a festival in 2021, so it was made, in, you know, but it was a 2021 actual
release. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to allow it.
2022. Yeah, I'm not worried about it either. I'm just noticing. I was like, why isn't it up on my... I'm looking at all the films and I'm going, why is it not showing up on my 2022 list? And I looked it up and go, oh, it's because it's on my 2021 list. So
okay, so... It was an especially strong year for horror. And of course, when I mean it was a strong year, I mean for your like stuff that's released, because things get made and they sit on a shelf or it takes however long to finish it. So, but it was an especially strong period for horror movies, because even the stuff that I saw that I'm like, I wasn't especially hot on, I was still like, yeah, that was pretty good. And Black Phone is definitely one of them. If I can, like, well, unless we want to stick with Black Phone, if I can move on a little bit to honorable mentions.
Go for it.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, let's do it.
I was going to say that even kind of the smaller stuff, I was pretty happy with. And this is the one I want to mention just for a moment to exemplify this, is this movie on, I think it's streaming on Paramount. Called Significant Other. I'm going to look up where that is. I know it's on some like streaming service I don't have and nobody has, but I got it for a free trial because there was something I wanted to see that I could only see on Paramount, I think. Yeah, it's Paramount Plus. And so I watched it, and it's Micah Monroe and Jake Lacy. They go hiking in the woods and something goes a little awry. It's not too much of a spoiler that it turns out to be kind of a body snatcher type movie. That I think that's pretty much revealed in the trailer, and it happens pretty early on. Where it's a movie that kind of, it's on a streaming service nobody has. It's not being advertised anywhere. Like, I don't know anybody else who's talking about this. It was a thoroughly respectable horror programmer, right? It's something that you would find maybe flipping channels, or you would see it was on cable and watch it and be like, hey, that was pretty good. I spent a good 90 minutes on that. I thought it was fun. It's like, it's nothing special, but it was just like, this movie just got buried and it's decent, right? There's just so much stuff that people can't keep up with, and that good stuff is just being left out there. Kind of like for the wolves.
That's the way it's always been, though.
Yeah, that's true. But I was like, that it just,
even
like,
before all the streaming services, there was always stuff that got get swept under the rug, you know. And then you go, oh, I didn't notice this movie that came out 10 years ago. And it's like, I was watching movies, I was in the theaters all the time. How come I didn't see this movie? It's like, yeah, it just didn't really get a release, you know. So,
yeah, that's just what I want to say to like how strong this year has been, that there's just like, there's good stuff, even when it's not like mind blowing, like or like favorite stuff. It's just like, you know, I've been impressed by the quantity of quality this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also I was going to say, I have a Micah Monroe movie in my honorable mentions, which is on Shudder, Watcher. directed by Chloe Okuno.
Yeah, Watcher was good.
I really like that. I like the setting of Bucharest, and a stranger in a strange land, doesn't understand the language, kind of virtually alone, even though she's moved there with her husband, who's working all the time. And she thinks that there's someone watching her from across the, you know, across the street from their window. And I really like how this whole movie just sets this up and it has you questioning the reality of the main character. Is this really happening? And it starts to get into like victimhood and believability and things like that. I thought this was a really good movie. I almost had it in my top five, but it was one I highly recommend.
Yeah, Watcher is really good. It's got the ever creepy Bern Gorman in it.
I love Bern Gorman. Not always creepy.
I like him a lot, but it took me a while because the first thing I ever saw him on was Torchwood, the Doctor Who spinoff. And yeah. I found him like distractingly odd looking. I don't know what.
He looks like one of my best friends. So I don't.
Oh, okay. I apologize to both Bern Gorman and your best friend, but
just fine. But he does. They have similar features and stuff. And I go, okay, yeah, that's fine.
But also, Torchwood is not good, or at least the first two seasons I saw. I did not like the first two seasons of Torchwood at all. And
are you kidding? I didn't like the later ones. I love the first one.
I have not seen the later ones because I hated the first two so much.
Wow. We loved Torchwood. It was fun.
Bern Gorman, it wasn't until I saw him on other things that I was like, oh, yeah, he's good. But I was just like, he's such a kind of an odd looking guy. I mean, not bad looking. I think he's you know, not ugly.
He's definitely got a certain look. Yes, I agree with you on that. But
yeah. But he is creepy in that movie, and he can be creepy. He can utilize that face.
Yeah.
So I got a couple special mentions I want to throw in here.
Okay.
And one of them is The Northman.
Oh, that's on my list.
I want to watch that.
Okay, yeah, so I'm not going to say too much about it, but everybody knows it's the kind of historical Viking action epic, but it definitely falls into horror category because it is such an unceasing flood of blood and gore and guts and terror, and there is the supernatural element. There's actually several supernatural elements to it, so it's not just straight historical Viking stuff. There's the paganism and their gods and all that stuff all plays into it and seems to work for some reason for certain things, and there is there are witches in it, you know, who cast spells and things like that, so it definitely falls into horror territory, and the main character just goes through so much, and it's just like nonstop violence in his life, and he's got to fight his way through it and you know, get his revenge and all that stuff. And it would actually be higher on my list, except I kind of tweaked it a little bit to get a couple things that I really wanted to talk about, like hatching and slashback and stuff. So, but yeah, I want to mention The Northman, a couple others. I want to, and this was done for a streaming service and it's barely an hour long, but it's a standalone thing and I'm going to consider it a film, and it's Werewolf by Night.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will consider that a film because I saw it in theaters this last year.
There you go. And you know, it's definitely in feature length territory as far as officially 40 minutes or more. So in the standard Hollywood, I mean, you know, there are a lot of, you know, films in the 30s and 40s that were like 50 minutes long. So, you know, and they were released as B features. So it definitely falls into that category. And it is just a deliriously fun ode to Universal monster movie kind of stuff. It's in black and white. You guys have seen it, I'm sure.
Yes.
I know Aaron's seen it, obviously. He's just said he saw it in theaters, but it's also Marvel, and it finally gives us a great look at Man-Thing, which was so well done and so much fun. And I just really, really adored watching it.
Yeah, it's a movie that from the first frame, I was like, oh, I am so in on this. I just loved the look of it, that black and white. I love the design and the music, of course. It was just a very like visually and orally pleasing film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the only reason I didn't put it on my top 10 list was because it is more Marvel product, you know, and so I kind of wanted to honor films that, you know, were legit, you know, I say, and I just included in a list of films, but I wanted to honor films that I thought were excellent, you know, well-crafted, you know, theatrical releases and things like that. But Werewolf by Night is terrific fun, and I have, you know, watched it a few times, and I will watch it many more times. So
yeah, I've watched it a few
times. My other honorable mention is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Oh, yeah.
The original Disney Pinocchio was formative in my life. I saw it when I was like 4 years old in the theater, in the Fourth Avenue Theater, and was probably my first taste of what I consider to be horror, because all the elements of horror are in that original Pinocchio story and in the Disney's movie, Monster of the Whale and the evil puppeteer Stromboli and Pleasure Island and kids turning into donkeys. It's a horror movie, and I've always considered it such. And Del Toro takes it, and you think, oh, he's going to make it even more movie. He didn't really. I mean, there are more supernatural elements in it, and there is a nice creepiness to some scenes, but he also kind of put more heart into it also, even though it has his look, you know, it has his wonderful design, and it has certainly the dark elements in Pinocchio, but he didn't make it any darker, but it is an interesting take on the material. But if I'm going to consider the Disney Pinocchio and the story of Pinocchio itself a horror tale, I'm going to have to throw Del Toro's in there too. And I love the movie. So I just at least wanted to put it in the special mention, not quite horror, but section. So.
Yeah, he may not have made it more of a horror movie, but he certainly did bring the biblically accurate blue fairy. I thought that was funnier. I said that as soon as it appeared to Amber, and like,
nice.
They didn't laugh much either. So
I know what you're talking about that. So.
I like that a lot. That would make a list of my favorite movies of the year. I didn't think to put it on a horror, even though I know you've made this argument to me before about it being a horror movie, and I completely agree. Or the Disney one being horror adjacent or whatever. Yeah. I agree, but I didn't think to put it on. But I think that is great. Speaking of Del Toro, I don't know if anybody has to go. I don't want to make it go too long. What?
No, not yet. No, okay. I'm good.
Carlos?
I probably will have to get off like at 10:30.
Okay, well, we'll wrap it up before then. But speaking of Del Toro, did everybody get a chance to watch his Cabinet of Curiosities?
Just the first two episodes so far. We kind of stopped there and we haven't picked it up again.
Okay. Well, I won't go too into it.
Really liked it. Just haven't gotten around. As you said earlier, there's just too many things to watch. So
yeah, I think it's good. I would
watch it on my own just automatically and just get it done with. But I started with Jen and I want to finish it with her. But at the same time, you know, she, you know, sometimes wants to watch other stuff, you know, or watch something lighter for a while, you know. So
yeah, I totally get that. I was a little mixed on the thing overall, but it had some really great things in it. Like, and it's fun to see. Like, I like anthologized horror in a like short form, like a television series. So I hope he gets to do more of them because it was certainly a worthwhile endeavor. Maybe not honorable mention, but I think it should be mentioned how many just like sequels and remakes there were this year, which is, you know, all years. I'm not trying to say that this 2022 is any different, but there were some pretty big high profile ones. I'm thinking like Scream Hellraiser. 5, the new, what's that?
Hellraiser,
the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I just had a list here. I'm sorry, I'm kind of vamping a bit, but the new Halloween, of course. we could talk about the Firestarter remake. Goodnight Mommy got a remake. I did watch that. I know.
You know, I would put Halloween Ends on my biggest disappointments of the year list.
Really?
I thought it was a good movie and I liked some of the weird twists it took. But as far as closing the trilogy, I felt it was underwhelming and just kind of unnecessary to even make it. I don't think it really did anything special. And considering how good the first one was, I honestly felt that the second one was unnecessary also. The second one was overlong, like maybe by half an hour, and just hit on some points over and over again, obviously. And I got it. It was more political and I just felt, didn't really need that out of a Halloween movie. And then the third one, I just kind of went, okay, yeah, I get the twist. It's kind of cool. But at the same time, it was like, I'm just kind of done with this. You know, it's like, that first one was so good and the battle was so great that the battle in this one is just very underwhelming. And it's like, well, you guys had such a cool battle in the first movie. It's like,
I was a little underwhelmed with Halloween 2018 because I didn't like the podcaster stuff in the beginning. I thought they were very annoying and not very interesting as characters to hang such a large chunk of the beginning of the movie on.
Podcasters were annoying?
And then I also thought the movie did not hit hard enough the family aspect. You've got Judy Greer in there and, you know, I just felt like the movie should have had more of a little bit of an oomph in the.
And you thought this one was better?
No, listen to me. I think the entire series wasted Judy Greer, especially because she's not even in the third one.
Judy Greer is one of the greatest people on earth. So I agree with you on that.
But she's also
a character that really does not exist anywhere else except for in these movies. So I wasn't expecting much out of her character. So Michael and Jamie Lee Curtis. So
I was disappointed slightly in Halloween, but I did like it a lot. It is my favorite out of the three new ones. But that disappointment meant that when Halloween Kills came out, I just appreciated that it took very big swings. It made very strong decisions. Like that movie is not what anybody wanted out of a Halloween movie, and they went for it, and I liked that. I'm not necessarily saying I like the movie. I don't like it better than the one that came before it, but I like that about it, and I had a lot of fun watching the movie.
I respect what you're saying there. I would agree with that.
And then Halloween Ends, I really liked the what they did with that new character, the daughter and everything. I agree with you that the final showdown is disappointing and but what's the guy's name? What's the character? Corey Cunningham. Another controversial decision to kind of like focus your Halloween movie on a different character, a new character who's kind of maybe seen as taking the mantle of Michael Myers. And I respect that decision. And I thought that their storyline and his performance and the way that they foreshadowed it was all really good. Like, I mean, I get that it's disappointing in the end, but I still on a moment to moment basis,
thought his arc was the best part of the picture.
Yeah. And on a moment to moment basis, I did like it.
But I thought all the Michael stuff was just wasted. Just wasted. Just all the stuff with Michael. I mean, the scenes with him and Michael in the tunnel and all that stuff, in the cave or whatever. That's all cool. But all the build up towards the actual finale of the film, you know, which is supposed to be the be all end all fight between her and Michael, is like just so underwhelming after what happened in the first film. So, because they had that crazy house with all the traps and all that stuff, and I mean that was so well done, that like second half of that movie where she and Michael are just going at it is just like incredible. And then you get to this and it's like, eh, you know, it's like, oh, you know, spilled it, not enough in there. So, you know, it's like, okay.
Well, we've been going for a little while, so I'm gonna stop talking. Well, not really stop, but I'm going to throw it out to you just to guys. Anything else you want to mention? Any honorable mentions? I'm only going to say Crimes of the Future is not on my list because that's science fiction. It is not horror. It is only horror because there's gross body stuff in it. That's the only reason people would qualify it as that.
I call it sci-fi body horror. So it's still, to me, it qualifies for horror. I just didn't like it enough. So
I liked it quite a bit. But
I liked it quite a bit too. I just didn't like it quite enough to make my top 10. So,
okay.
Yeah. I gave it a 7. I gave it a 7 out of 9 on my scale, which is very high. It's a very good rating for me. I also gave that to Hellraiser too. And I like Moloch also. And Prey.
Moloch is great. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And also Prey, the new Predator movie.
Oh my God. That didn't even show up on my list.
It's good. But
I did an episode on that.
Yeah.
One of my few episodes last year was for Prey. That's great. I love that. I watched
it. Yeah, I have that in my honorable mentions as well.
And I also like the Scream movie too.
Yeah, that was good. Carlos, you got anything you want to shout out really quick?
I really like, just for the blood factor and how fun it was, but I have Christmas, Bloody Christmas.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Well, if you haven't seen it, it's basically just like a killer robotic Santa.
I hated it.
Oh, man. I
thought it was fun.
Yeah, I think I texted you and Andrea, Aaron, when I was watching it and saying how it was just, the color was so oversaturated, and you get no break from it, and it's just, I just found it astoundingly boring is what I found it. And I'm sitting there going, just like numb watching it going, I just don't get what anybody gets from this. And I like, you know, I've liked some of Joe Bago's movies, but I just have not liked the last
talk about it. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't liked his last couple of movies, and both movies, he uses this oversaturated color scale that I just don't get why he's doing it. I don't want to see everything in purple. You know, it's like, it's sickening green. You know, it's just like, I just got so tired of watching it. And it's like, and I just didn't think his script was very good either. So I got what he was doing, but it was like, eh. So yeah, it was underwhelming. Okay.
Well, I'll probably check it out just for Joe Bigos.
By all means, check any of these movies out. I don't want to keep anybody from watching any of them, but just don't watch Firestarter.
No, Firestarter is not good.
Firestarter was not disappointing for me, though, because I don't like the book and I didn't like the first movie. So
it was an early Stephen King for me. So I like the story enough, but I haven't liked any of the movies. In terms of remakes, sequels, and everything, VHS 99, a series that I am not always in love with, but VHS 99, or wait, 94, sorry, 99 was the previous one, 94.
No, VHS 99 was the one from this year.
Yeah, 99 is the latest. Yeah. 94 was the one before, I believe.
Yeah,
what am I looking at? Okay.
VHS 99 is the new one, yeah.
Okay, then, yeah, you're right. Sorry about that, getting the numbers wrong. Also had Mabel the Skullbiter in it, the breakout character of the year, who also appears as the ghost in Deadstream, and was in something else that I watched recently. I'm not trying to remember what that was.
You know, I liked VHS 99. I just, you know, that series is fun. I mean, it's got crazy ass sequences in every single one of them. You know, sometimes they're good, better. Sometimes they're better than others, but this one had a lot of strong segments in it. So, I mean, I liked it. Just, you know, again, a whole lot of good movies this year. So,
yeah.
And yeah, so I like that one too.
I think that might do it for us. Oh, I'm going to mention really quickly, Saloom. It came out in 2021, but it had an American release in 2022.
So, that's on my list for films I first saw this year in 2022 that were 2021 films.
Yeah.
Saloom and The Sadness.
I haven't watched that yet. Sadness is a movie I'm not sure I can handle. Like, I got to be in the right mood for it.
Like, yeah, it's rough and it's so good, though. I mean, it's so crazy. And then She-Will, you watched that one, right? I told you about that one.
I did not watch it yet.
Oh, yeah. Yes. If I went back and did a retroactive 2021 horror film list, I think She-Will, all three of these movies, actually, there's a fourth one, too. The Innocents would show up in there, too. I watched that in 2022. And have you seen The Innocents yet?
Yeah, The Innocents was really good.
Yeah, except it's another one of those kid things. So
yeah, but that one, I don't know.
Kids with superpowers who are abusing each other. So
so the actress who plays Mabel the Skullbiter from VHS 99 is Melanie Stone. She was in Christmas Dragon, which was on this season of MST3K. That's what I saw her on.
Oh yes, yes, she was. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I had to, but go ahead.
No, but yeah, the Innocents was also a good 2021 film that I first saw in the last few months. So
that's good. If that had come out this year, that might have made it into my top five.
Well, any four of these would have made my top 10 this year if they were not 2021 films.
Unless anybody has anything else, and I'm completely open to talking for a few more minutes, but I just know it's getting late, so I thought I'd
I think we've covered a whole lot of stuff. So
Carlos?
I don't think I have any other ones.
Did you guys have any like really disappointing films from this year? Like I did with Halloween Ends?
From this year, my most disappointing, like you said, I didn't expect much from it. But it was bad. Was Firestarter.
Yeah.
On top of that, I really was disappointed with Scare Package 2. I found Scare Package
so disappointed.
I found the first one to be intermittently very enjoyable enough that I was excited to see a sequel. The sequel is just top to bottom tedious. There's nothing in it that I found enjoyable at all. Yep.
Absolutely. I watched it with my jaw agape going, how do they screw this up after the first one?
Glorious.
Carlos, was one of those films?
Carlos?
What?
Oh, did you watch any of the Scare Package?
Oh, no. I don't know what that is.
it's anthology movies. They're on Shutter. The first one is fun. Check it out.
Okay.
Horror comedy. Very, very odd comedy.
Yeah.
And then for disappointments, I just want to say Glorious was a premise I thought was going to be I don't know. It had a good premise. It had a good cast, a very game cast. Was fine. But I was a bit disappointed in terms of I felt it could have been so much more.
Going in, did you think it was going to be much more?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like.
Yeah, again, I agree with you there too. I thought it was good, but going in and seeing what it looked like when I went into it, I was just like, oh, this is going to be great. And then I was like, it's okay. You know, it's like, you know, another one that really disappointed me and I don't think is great or even good, was Studio 666.
Oh, The Foo Fighters. I haven't watched that movie.
I was like, oh, cool. A little kind of horror, Hard Day's Night kind of thing going on here. And just a rock band screwing around in a haunted house. And it was just annoying. It was just like, I don't want to hang out with these guys. And I like these guys. It was just like.
No, that's a shame. That's a shame.
I was like, this will be kind of fun. Dave Grohl and Taylor Hawkins kind of goofing around and all that stuff. You know, right before Terry Hawkins died. And And I thought, oh yeah, this will be fun. And then I just kind of go and it's like, why did I rent this? You know. Actually, I think I bought it. I think I still have it. It was like a $6.99 rental or a $9.99 buy. And I was like, well, I'm not going to buy the DVD. So I'll just buy it, you know. So I'll probably watch lots of Foo Fighters. And they'll be playing music and stuff. And I was like, well, now I own it and I don't want to watch it again. It's like.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it. It hasn't been like high up on my list. But yeah. I figured I would eventually. But anyway, Carlos, do you have anything else? I feel like... I keep asking you, but I feel like we just kind of like are hogging the conversation for a moment.
Oh, no worries. No, it's just that I haven't seen some of the ones you've mentioned. I did have another one that I'll quickly mention before we go. I won't have much to say because there's really Mad God. I don't know if you did.
Oh,
you
guys shit. That? I that's another one I'm waiting for Amber just because Amber is such an animation.
Oh, okay.
I watched it. I loved it. It was crazy. I'm not going to say I loved it. Okay. Yeah. Again, it's one of those movies where it's really hard to watch, actually.
Yeah. Actually, when I watched it, I didn't like, I had seen the trailer, but I didn't realize what I was going to watch. I had prepared food. I sat down and I was like, oh, this is a bad idea. This is
not a good one to watch. Eat food during.
Definitely not. So I stopped eating and I finished the movie. But I think that I would compare this to, if anything, Dante Alighieri's The Inferno, because that's what this movie feels like. This man going on a journey through hell, and it is the worst things you could imagine. And it feels like you're going through like the 9 levels of hell in this movie.
That is a very apt comparison. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, it's a wildly experimental, shot over, I think, like 30 years.
30 years, yeah.
Yeah, there's like live action, mostly stop animation, but I really like the look of it. It's a very unique piece of film.
Yeah, and I think the only fault with it is that it doesn't have a storyline you can really follow. Really doesn't. It's just a series of slightly connected scenes, and you don't know who anybody is. You can figure it out as you go along, but there's a lot of stuff I'm still questioning. And then the other fault with it is that it just doesn't have replay value for me. As much as I was waiting to see it, and I like Phil Tippett, and I appreciate his work, and I appreciate all the animation in this movie, and I'm a stop motion nut, and I would probably watch it again just for the technical stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the storyline just doesn't make me ever want to revisit it, you know. And like now I'm questioning, do I really want to buy it on Blu-ray? Because, you know, maybe for extra features or something like that, but I don't know if I really want to watch it again. So. I gave it a high rating. I really enjoyed it. I think it's excellent. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's quite a masterpiece, but for what it is, it's kind of a masterpiece for him. Yeah. But it's like, it's really, but it's also a 2021 film. So it just took a while to get online.
Yeah,
so.
I'm waiting to watch it with Amber, but also what's kind of keeping it like lower on the list is that I know we're going to have that reaction. It doesn't seem like something that they really would like, but they really love animation. So I know they're interested. I just don't think they're going to like it. but that's going to do it for us. I mean, I got to stop it here because we're already going past schedule, and I know we could go for another hour at least, but it has to end sometime. So I'm going to say good night here to both of you guys.
Yes.
We will probably talk about some of these other movies. I feel like there might be episodes in the future for some of them. But definitely you guys will be on again soon, either together or apart. We just got to get that scheduled. But thank you guys. This was a lot of fun. I'm going to say goodbye to you guys. I'm going to say goodbye to the audience. Keep listening. Head to wherever you downloaded this. Rate, review, subscribe. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you're listening. Drop me a line. I'm on Twitter @twoheadedpod. Instagram, I think the same thing, or Two Headed Podcast. And there's a Facebook group for our page for the Incredible Two Headed Podcast. And I'm going to be getting back into social media. Like, I haven't even been doing my personal social media lately. I've just been like, I don't have the bandwidth for it, but I'm going to be more active. That is my New Year's promise. But thank you guys for coming on the show, talking about a great year in horror. And hey, let's meet back here next year and do the same thing.
Sounds great.
Sweet.
just a lot of silence, guys. Come on.
Oh, I didn't know we were sweating. Goodbye.
No, like just to say something about like, let's meet back here next year. And just like nothing. Okay.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Well, anyway, I mean, we will. We'll see each other around.
If I survive this cop, I'll see you next year.
You guys are both going to be on multiple times this year. And I'll be on your show. And in some formation or another, we'll be doing this again pretty soon.
Definitely. And I'll keep thinking about doing a show, but not doing it. So,
yeah. Well, we'll talk about that.
Keep watching the skies.
Oh, that's what I was going to say about Nope. Is that for all of the years of Watch the Skies, Nope got me to do it. Nope got me staring at clouds and watching the skies all the time. I will send pictures. I will send pictures of suspicious looking clouds to Amber.
Now everybody knows amazing. It's not the clouds you got to be afraid of. It's hedges.
Hedges?
Yeah, just keep watching the hedges.
Keep watching.
Everywhere you walk. Keep watching that. Someday it's going to pay off. So.
Okay. Hedges. All I'm thinking. Yeah. I don't know what that.
Oh, hey, don't hedge your bets. Okay.
Oh, well. Okay. Maybe we should have just kept it mysterious. All right, you guys. Have a good one. Everybody listening.
You too.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.